And we are live for another edition of Pod Strickland. I am your host, JB, after what has been a crazy week and a half following the draft and free agency. But I got my coffee here and I got my sidekick, Mr. Schwinny Pooh. Schwinn, how's it going?
It is going pretty well. I got to watch a epic comeback from Manchester United this morning. So far, so good for Sunday.
Oh, good, good. And we are really excited to be joined, as most people listening will know him from the Terry and Trey, both Twitter account and YouTube page. Terry, how's it going this morning? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, we're back. We took a little hiatus. Pretty good time to take a hiatus, to be honest. But we're glad to be back and right in the thick of it with what an insane week, really. It's funny, right? Because nothing really that big happened in terms of the Knicks, when you think of the NBA landscape. But to us, it felt like the craziest week ever. But that's New York basketball fandom.
No, exactly. Yeah, so people, if you somehow don't know, make sure you go onto YouTube. You can just search NYK Terry and Trey, and you'll find their page. And they just do a great job with reacting to news with fun videos, both commentary, highlights. So make sure you guys check that out. But thinking about where to start, what I looked at last night, and I messaged Schwinn because I thought this was interesting, is on his Twitter page, the pinned tweet, he wrote this on July 24th, and he listed out five things that he calls keys to making Knicks fans happy this summer. And I thought it was interesting to maybe kind of revisit some of these things as we now are a couple days away from training camp. The first one was easy. It was don't hire Jason Kidd as head coach.
So as far as that one's concerned, I would say that they succeeded. But, you know, I guess maybe we can just like talk about the coaching search a little bit. I mean, I know that there was this idea that they kind of went through this whole song and dance just to ultimately hire the guy they wanted all along. And I agree that like ultimately they did hire the guy that they probably started off as, hey, this is the guy that we did. This is our top candidate, right? I'm just not really sure, I guess, like, is that a bad thing? Like, you know, I think people should realize that, you know, when teams do coaching searches, they're going to have an ordered list of just like, hey, these are preferred candidates. These are guys that we're going to talk to, and we'll see how it goes on. In between, I think that they clearly did a good job of at least canvassing a variety of candidates. And I was pretty satisfied with just like the time they took, how thorough they were. And ultimately, I was fine with Tibbs. I would have been fine with, there were like four or five guys that I think ultimately I would have been okay with them landing on, and Tibbs happened to be one of them.
So what do you think, Terry? Like you said, you were kind of, I guess, maybe just coming out of your break when all this is going on with the coaching search, but were you happy with where they landed with Tibbs?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like Shrini said, really, not my first choice, but in the end, we don't know the interpersonal things that are going on. We don't know how well, you know, they're getting along with certain people. You know, I was really looking for Atkinson. I was excited about it. But a lot of that is also nostalgia and trying to, you know, fix the wrongs of the past, so to speak. But for me, they were thorough. They've been thorough with pretty much everything so far. I think you see a whole front office right now that's doing a lot more work at the margins, you know, compared to before. So I would assume in good faith that that also happened with the coaching search. And from our point of view, it did seem that way. And listen, yeah, I haven't been annoyed with the Knicks defense forever, so at least we're going to be hopefully a good defensive team. You know what I mean? And look, Tibbs is a real coach. This isn't Fizdale, right? I will throw shots at David Fizdale forever if you keep me on. Tibbs can coach. Yeah. It's not perfect. He had some issues in Minnesota, but at least I can expect that we should see a plan on the court on both sides of the ball, and he's going to hold guys accountable. And, you know, we're a franchise that's been taking baby steps for the past 3-4 years. To me, this is like another baby step towards respectability. So I'm happy for it. You know, sometimes that home run coach, you know, I actually always thought maybe Fizdale could be the culture guy that got us to a point where we'd get a better coach to actually win, except we pretty much just wasted a year and a half with him. So hopefully now if Tibbs doesn't end up being the guy long term, I think hopefully, you know, and I think this is kind of the goal of the franchise right now, right, is let's get to respectability, you know, not to bring up the Nets, but let's kind of do what the Nets did, which is at least get ourselves back in the NBA zeitgeist and then right. make another step forward. Because sometimes it does take baby steps, and hopefully Tibbs can be the guy to at least get us started.
And I think the thing too is when you think about this offseason, it's kind of like people may be tuning in right now, like, oh, you know, I want to hear how the Knicks are going to get Batum on the roster for a draft pick. It's all about like the latest rumor. But I think it's important to step back and talk about the coach again, because when you evaluate what this front office has done, and we'll get into this in terms of, you know, what has really been different about the past and how much that's in the margins and whether that matters or not, et cetera. But to me, getting their front office and coaching hires are the biggest step forward, in my opinion, because, you know, after years of having the Jeff Hornacek's, the Derek Fishers, the David Fizdales, it is a big deal to have
Kurt Rambis.
Oh yeah. Can't forget Kurt Rambis. Can't forget that. So I think that is something that, even though it happened a long time ago, it's still important to keep kind of in the front of our mind in terms of what is different going into this season. And that's a big bit. And then one other point before I pivot is, it also follows this theme. So like you were saying, Chuen, about, well, did it matter that they did this big search and maybe it was always to land on the same guy? And I think the commentary we're seeing with the Knicks, even in their signings, is obviously there's a lot of CAA guys, there's a lot of Kentucky guys. And I think Tibbs is a perfect example to me of, it doesn't really, like, you're going to utilize the relationships you have. I don't care who you are. You're going to utilize the relationships you have to recruit talent. And just because you did that doesn't mean that the hire or the signing is tainted. And I think it's important to kind of think of that as we even go through talking about these other players, because, you know, it's an important, it's worthwhile mentioning that they have these Kentucky CAA ties, but it doesn't by any stretch mean that it's a bad thing that they decided to hire people that they happen to know a lot about.
And I think, so one thing, just to go back, not completely, this actually ties in. So like forever, and this gets annoying. It's not just with the Knicks, it's with like any team that is like undergoing a rebuild or whatever you want to call it, is there's obsession with like, we need to establish a culture. We need to, you know, set a foundation of this is how we're, like, there's always this discussion of it. And I think what's important in terms of like, what does that actually mean? Right. And one thing is, none of the signings they made are like, money talks in the NBA, right? You get signed for a certain amount, at least initially, it says something about kind of what your role and expectation is going to be on the team. Right. So like, none of these guys that they signed are on contracts where they can just like walk into training camp and they don't really feel like they have to earn anything, or like the spot is theirs, right? So I think that's really important in terms of helping set a culture. The fact that, yes, of course, there's a lot of Kentucky guys, there's a lot of CAA guys. Guess what? Look around the NBA. There's a lot of Kentucky guys, there's a lot of CAA guys. This is not like some Knicks fucking specific thing. There's a lot of clutch guys in the NBA on the Lakers. I don't think anybody gives a shit about that, especially now that they won a championship. Like two of the guys they did sign this offseason aren't CAA. Burks is not a Kentucky guy. Rivers is not a Kentucky guy. Like, you can find whatever. I've done this before, where you can connect agents to players and find some weird connection to your team and why signing the 15th guy they did is related to making XYZ. Like, you can find these connections if you want. Obviously, in the Knicks case, there's a little bit more of straightforwardness because of the people they've brought in. But what I wanted to say in terms of establishing culture is, I think like the key is, one, you're not bringing in guys that feel like they're made men, right? They're not made. Like, Nerlens Noel is not coming into the Knicks training camp like, I got this. This is on lock. Like, this is my position. No chance, right? Alec Burks has been bouncing around the league for the last 3-4 years. This is not a guy who's coming into Knicks camp and is like, this is at 1 year, $6 million. That is not a contract that speaks to, this is my team, this is my spot. Like, he's going to have to earn the minutes too. And, you know, same with Payton, who I know people are not happy with the re-signing. But, like, quite frankly, like I said, money talks. He's making less money this year than Dennis Smith Jr. and Frankie Laquina. Okay? So, like, if they can't take the spot from him at that point, then it says something about them. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on absolutely. And on. And I think, like, what I want, ultimately what I'm trying to say is, I think, like, one thing, right, with Tibbs, and Minnesota was different and it was weird, and I'm not trying to dismiss that, because that was, look, like the whole resume counts. So, like, you know, whatever his issues were there, they exist and they're real and we can't dismiss them. But, like, when you talk about establishing a culture that you want to have, that, like, demands kind of a commitment to team and that values effort and excellence, like, I think people forget how incredibly well-disciplined and how difficult those Chicago teams were that he coached to beat. And, like, I remember being a Knicks fan watching those teams and being like, Jesus, I'm so fucking jealous of, like, this culture they've established. And I just remember, like, the year when we won 54 games, the Bulls had, like, 98 injuries that year. Like, I think Rose was out for basically the whole year. You know, they had 58 other injuries. Lowell Deng is, like, basically unable to function in the playoffs. They're playing, like, John Lucas III at point. Nate Robinson is moonlighting as some, like, God mode playoff performer. Ultimately, like, they won a playoff series. They lost to Miami in round two. What I'm saying, though, is, like, he did establish a culture that people around the NBA were envious of and impressed by at one point.
Right.
And I think that matters, that, like, you have a guy that has done something like that before, and you look at the assistants they've added, like Kenny Payne. Yeah, I know Kentucky is easy. They get the top 50 guys every year they want. Sure, but, like, you look at the culture they've established there, where five-star recruits come in, and, like Devin Booker, right? Five-star recruit. What did he do? He was a spot-up shooter at Kentucky. Like, he did not get on-ball reps. He was not running point or, you know, point forward or whatever the hell you want. Like, he was a floor spacer. And they've established that kind of culture where guys come in and they sacrifice for, you know, what the team's goals are. And he has experience, obviously, with guys on the roster. And, you know, you look up and down the organization. I just think that, like, there is these guys that they've hired, sure, they're all connected. A lot of them have connections to Kentucky, CAA, Leon Rose, whatever. But they're all guys that have resumes that stand on their own, and they've earned the positions they're in. So yeah, you talk about establishing a culture. I think there's a big difference between what they've done this offseason versus, you know, the Perry Mills stuff and all this previous, and not just Perry and Mills, right? It goes back.
Yeah, it goes right to fill in everything. So, I mean, you brought up Peyton, and that was the next point you had on your keys. So one was don't hire a kid. Second was get a lead ball handler via draft or free agency. So I'll start with you, Terry, because I think anyone who follows Schwinn knows his feelings about Peyton. But even broader than that, I mean, there's multiple ball handlers on the Knicks roster. What is your feeling going into the season in terms of how the point guard position is shaping up? Do you like where they're at? How do you feel about Peyton fitting into that? Just kind of your general thoughts on that.
Well, I'm not happy. How's that? I think for me, you know, we end the season last year. Obviously, I think we're all Frank fans here. Frank has a really nice end to the season, 20-10, his second to last game, I think. Youngest Nick with that stat line, blah, blah, blah. So I'm thinking we're going into this offseason. I think last year, you know, Frank did make some strides. Dennis Smith Jr. fell off a cliff. Peyton was solid as he's been his whole career. But, you know, his play style, especially how he plays with Julius Randle, his lack of spacing, his fake defense that certain analysts like to praise when it's clear they've not been watching the games, Mr. John Hollinger. Anyway, so just so for me, I just felt like, okay, so we're getting into the offseason. Let's maybe get a point guard that at least is going to be solid, can stretch the floor. I was really not looking for a home run, but I was really looking forward to a guy like George Hill, DJ Augustine, anyone like this coming in who can shoot. Because you can see last year, it's clear having three point guards that can't shoot just hurts the spacing, it hurts the team. I'm fine with Frank and Dennis developing, you know, coming off the bench, finding a role, but I really wanted a lead guard that can shoot, and we still don't have that, and Peyton's back, and now I'm kind of like, okay, so now we have three more guards that can't shoot. Alfred yep. Payton, Frank Ntilikina, Dennis Smith Jr., all basically on one-year deals. So now you have contract year guys, but you haven't really seen, I still feel like we really haven't seen everything we need to see from Frank. And it reminds me of going back to Jarrett Jack, Emmanuel Mudiay, Trey Burke, all these little stopgap measures, and we're still, it's almost like, what's the Thanos line? It's like, it brought you back to me. It's still Frank here. And it's like, why, you know, I'm not one of these people who says, you know, he never got a chance. Frank has had chances here and there. I don't think we've developed him like we should have. I don't think he's gotten what he would have needed being an 18-year-old coming from Europe into this environment. But, you know, it's also on him as at this point as well. He's going to have to come into camp and really, you know, play for that position and show that he deserves it. But I feel like this feels incomplete. That's what it feels like. It feels incomplete. It feels like they tried some stuff. I think there's a lot more going on behind the scenes. You know, JB, you did post a couple days ago about, you know, we were basically here praising Leon Rose. Turns out they were about to risk it all for Gordon Hayward. So right. it's been interesting to see the approach. I think there was probably more behind the scenes with regards to looking for a lead ball handler, and they maybe didn't get what they wanted, or they didn't like the deal. Now, you know, Payton hasn't officially been signed. It's one of those weird ones where it's kind of hanging in the balance, and we're not sure exactly, you know, what's going to happen with that. If there's another move to be made, we'll see. But I guess kind of feel incomplete. I feel like here we are again. And maybe, you know, Dennis Smith Jr., you know, just to plug the channel real quick, we did a video on Dennis Smith Jr.'s shooting and how much it supposedly improved with Prez from the Strickland. He did a great job breaking it down. And again, that's also incomplete, right? We can't really tell if he's gotten better or not. He will no way in hell is he going to be as bad as last season, because those numbers don't even make sense. That's not an NBA player that we saw last season. But eye test was bad and the numbers were worse. So I don't think Dennis Smith Jr. is going to be nearly that bad. He was also going through a lot off court, all that stuff. So I do actually think, at least from Frank and Dennis, we will see improved play from both of them. You know, maybe one of them takes the leap and then we're happy. But my real, you know, when I think of the point guard position, and I know he's not a natural point, but I'm so intrigued by what Emmanuel Quickley could potentially do or mean for this franchise. You see guys like this who are drafted in the, you know, the teens or the 20s, and they have a skill set in college that looks insane, but it wasn't really utilized fully, right? It was maybe, I think Devin Booker had this issue as well, where you didn't really know everything you could do because it wasn't really relied on in that role. And then they come to the league and it just clicks better, right? A more offensive game, it just makes more sense. Quickly, his shooting is not just very good, it's elite. And obviously it has to translate and we need to see what that turns into. And I think this is definitely a long shot that he could be our point for the future. But I'm very excited to see what a real floor spacer can do, adding in that he also plays defense, so we're not losing too much there. And then, you know, with RJ being a ball handler as well, you could see it potentially working. So I feel incomplete. Yep. That's what I feel. I feel incomplete. Yeah. I feel like seeing a bunch of guys coming into camp that are all kind of fighting for a position. Shrin, you've been talking about this past couple days, and I really agree with you that, you know, Elfrid's coming back in, and there's a lot of vitriol on the timeline on Twitter when that signing went through. But, you know, he's on a one-year, $5 million deal. He's not penciled in as a starter. This is a new regime. No. We don't know what they're looking for. Things are going to be different than Fizz. So we will see. But like I said, incomplete. That's how I feel right now.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is when you're trying to come up with a depth chart for this team right now, there are, I'm going to say, six guards, leaving RJ aside as more of a wing that would play, I think, majority of his time as the three. Based
it
on how
seems like they're structuring it for him to play the three, right? Just right. Kind of the way they've signed guys.
Exactly. So if you look at it that way, I think the reason why Payton kind of keeps coming up is because you can make the argument that, you know, Payton and Dennis Smith Jr. are your traditional lead guards, with Burks, Rivers, Frank, and Quickley off guard. But what I want to say that I think it's important to realize when you look at it that way is, to me, Alec Burks is the X factor, because he gives you a player who can create both for himself and for others as well as shoot. Meaning, if you have to have lineups where you have Burks as essentially your lead ball handler, and then he's playing next to a Frank or a Quickley, meaning you don't have either Payton or Dennis Smith Jr. on the floor, I think you can get away with that. And I think what, even with RJ, what we have to remember is, and I want to say Thibodeau even hinted at this in one of his press conferences, but you can create, you can facilitate the offense or generate the beginning action, at least, through players along the wing or who aren't lead guards. And the Knicks have now a few players that fit well into that role, both with RJ and Burks, which make it where if you suddenly feel like, man, like we need to figure out where we're getting some shooting, because if we're playing, you know, Mitch, and if let's say Randall's still here and RJ, and that's your front court for certain lineups, you know, we can't afford to have a point guard who's not shoot. So let's get away with it with trying to have a Quickly and Burks playing together in the backcourt, or, you know, an Austin Rivers and Burks playing together. It's not to say that I think that either Austin Rivers or Quickly would be who I would say is like the ideal point guard, but I think that might be some ways you can sneak in some shooting and get away with it, is rather than just think traditionally our point guard has to start the offense, use some of these wing guard players who have the ability to work out of the pick and roll and start the offense for you, and then sneak some shooting in that way.
That was a lot. I mean that in a good way. I think I agree with you that, like, so the way I think of it, and I'm not sure, I'm just take it for what it's worth, the way things have come out this offseason, I personally think that pretty early on they determined, look, they probably had I'm sure they made their run at DJ Augustine and whatever. I think that they determined that getting a lead guard was going to be pretty difficult, a good one. So I think that's why they were aggressive about trying to get Hayward, because he is a wing who can help facilitate. I think Burks was signed exactly, or not exactly, but in large part because of the versatility you're describing. And I think that was just like something that they had kind of calculated and baked into their team building process early on in this offseason. And I think that influenced their choice of like, hey, look, like we've got, let's say there's four or five different options of like veteran point guard types that you know you can get for a year. I mentioned this on the pod that we recorded yesterday with Drew and James, but like, you know, sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. And whatever Peyton's issues are, we know what he brings to the table. I don't know if this is true or not, but it seemed like when I was watching them last year that Frank and it seemed like he rooted for the guys on, you know, at his position. Like I've seen him get off the bench and chest bump Frank and really like pump him up and celebrate when Frank's playing well. Dennis Smith did not play well very often last year, so I don't remember those instances, but I would imagine that they occurred. And I think that like he's generally been spoken of positively as a teammate. Our issue with him, and if you really look at it, most people's issue with him has nothing to do with like he's a bad teammate or he can't pass or he does nothing well. It's mostly the Randall thing, and also that he can't shoot. But like, you're not getting anybody at that price without flaws. I would have preferred Shabazz Napier. He has probably less of a quality ball handler than Elfrid Payton is, but he can shoot. And I thought that was really important to get in terms of a lead ball handler. So I guess if you want to say, I would say the Knicks failed that, sure.
Yeah.
But I do think that they like addressed, or they at least tried to bring in some of that kind of pull-up shooting ability from other positions, in terms of Rivers and Burks. Those are two guys that can do that. I think Quickly has that potential. He showed it in college. So like they didn't totally punt on it. I just think that like there just weren't a lot of good options. And to go back, like, look, I know that people have this thing about, oh, Dennis Smith Jr.'s upside. I, for the life of me, don't understand it at all. Like, what are we talking about when we're talking about upside? Because as far as I can tell, as much of a project as Frank has been offensively throughout his NBA career, and I will admit that readily, he's been an absolute project, I saw actual tangible signs of progress on that side of the ball. And for all of his shittiness on that side of the ball, he's consistently graded out as a net positive player for the Knicks. That doesn't necessarily say that much because the Knicks have been garbage, but it does say that he's been among the better impact players on the team, I think, pretty consistently. And I think we saw genuine progress from him on that side of the ball last year, especially once we got an actual head coach in place. That leads me to kind of be a little bit more bullish on him, maybe offensively, than other people are. I say all this to say that he was consistently a really good defensive player from day one. He has shown a lot more progress to me than Dennis Smith Jr., who for all of his, you know, highlight reel chutzpah, does not actually have any track record of being a positive offensive contributor. At no point in his career has he sniffed league average efficiency. At no point in his career has he been efficient in terms of finishing at the rim. At no point in his career has he even been a good free throw shooter. At no point in his career has he been a good pull-up shooter from any range. Like, you're basically just saying that the fact that he does shit makes him a better, it profiles him as a quote-unquote true traditional point guard more so than somebody like Frank, who falls into more of like a Derek Fisher type of floor organizing game manager type of point guard. Mm-hmm. We can argue that all day. My point is, on a team with this many developmental players, and I did a tweet yesterday where I named it out, but the Knicks have 10 guys on rookie scale contracts right now. Okay. With a, on a team with that many developmental players, I think a player like Frank, a point guard like Frank, is way more useful to the future of this, the current and future of this team potentially, than a player like Dennis Smith Jr., who is still, I'm not even saying you can't have hope for him, but he in himself is a way bigger project right now than Frank is. He has to do so much more self kind of like exploration of what is good and what is bad about his game and how can he kind of make that bear within a team context. Because when I've seen him play on the Knicks and when I've seen him play in Dallas, this is a guy who, yes, he can do a lot of shit, but he does not do all that shit in the context of the team functioning properly. He cannot even set up a fucking half-court set right now, which is insane to me that a player who is a top five recruit, who has played point guard his entire life, can't do the very, very basic, the most basic thing that you expect of a point guard that Frank has been able to do since age 18 when he came into the NBA, unable to dribble past half court. Okay. Yeah, so no, like for me, I hear that argument and I understand it. I just cannot wrap my head around it. And I almost completely reject it, but I just want to say this. I don't think the Knicks should punt on Dennis Smith Jr. Just like I don't think they should punt on Frank, because you're not going to get any good value out of them right now in terms of what you would even net in trade, which I have no clue what it would be. And like, he is young, he is super athletic. Like there's a chance that, you know, Kenny Payne and Johnny Bryant III are, you know, the Dennis Smith Jr. whisperers, and all of a sudden all the things that people see pop off. I don't think they should on that or any of the rookie scale guys, just my personal opinion anyway.
Yeah, no, a lot there. I think just one thing too, just to get back in turn to what we're talking about with the lineup, is the fundamental issue here in terms of when you bring in a point guard like Peyton, who's not going to give you perimeter shooting, is if you play some large chunk of minutes with Mitchell Robinson, RJ Barrett, and Elfrid Payton or Dennis Smith Jr., which is not unreasonable to think those three would play a lot of minutes together based on how the depth chart is, and the fact that obviously you want to play Mitch and RJ, you know, that leaves you extremely limited where you have to really force in significant amounts of shooting in the other two positions versus when you have a point guard who can actually knock down a shot, that takes some pressure off who you're playing at the other position. So that's one reminder. As far as Dennis Smith Jr., I agree with you, because to me, I think I like to kind of categorize players in terms of like, okay, how can I see this player? What role could I see this player thriving in? Because I think that's really how even coaches, I think, look at it. And Dennis Smith Jr. to me is your classic come off the bench. You need some instant offense, and he will have some stretches like that where he's hot on a given night and he can do some different things to kind of get the offense moving without even necessarily himself knocking down shots, just like in his style of play. And he will give you some energy on defense, at least in terms of like, you know, along the perimeter, maybe, you know, jumping in front of in a passing lane and then turning that into a play the other way, stuff like that. So I feel like he gives you some energy and potential scoring from the bench, But that's totally different. And that's something that I think is very easy to find other players to get, play that role than it is to your point, to find someone to play Frank's role, which you can't come up with a long list of players who are actually happy to not have the ball in their hands and will do all the little things. And just like Dennis Smith Jr., if we're asking for him to take a jump on his shot, well, if Frank takes a leap on his shot, well, then, you know, you're in a better position.
And he's like Frank and Terry, me and you've talked about Frank like pretty much a billion times, drunkenly after the Mavericks lost to the Knicks. We've talked about it. but like players like that, if you start, and this is not like me trying to like gas up Frank, because I understand the people that are like kind of over him. I mean, I get it. I also think they're stupid, but like, that's fine. I get it. But like, if you start listing out, and I'm curious to know like who you would kind of list as, you know, archetypes for Frank to follow. But like, for me, players like Frank, if he just hits at a league average 3-point rate, they are players that are lineup connectors, and they make sense of like various different, you know, you can play a variety of lineups with a player like Frank, right? And I'll give you an example of a player I think is like Frank, at the hot in terms of, you know, quote unquote, a high end outcome for him, which I don't even really think is too far away, at least in terms of just like play style and what their production could be. But like, I think Marcus Smart is a player like Frank who, and you know, people will be like, what are you talking about? Go check out Marcus Smart's just shooting numbers in general throughout his career, and then just like compare them to Frank's at the same age. And not just shooting, you just compare their like rate stats and all that kind of stuff. Very, very similar, extremely similar players. And I think that the problem with players like that, and this is something the Celtics, I don't even want to say they got lucky with, because Ainge actually, you know, as much as, and JB knows I hate Danny Ainge as much as the next guy, but I'll give him some credit here. Like, he made moves to kind of help the Celtics win, right? Like, he went out and traded for Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart's rookie year. And that made the Celtics a better team. You know, they did various things to actually make the team win. And all of a sudden, you bring in a player, an offensive engine like Isaiah Thomas, which means that Marcus Smart doesn't have to be this traditional point guard guy. He can lean into his strengths. All of a sudden, you appreciate a guy like that. And you really like see, wow, this guy can really impact the game in ways that we don't have other players like that. And like, I've seen Frank literally, I mean, JB, you made one of my favorite videos ever of Frank just like giving Kyrie Irving nightmares, right? In just like one-on-one as a rookie. That's crazy. Like, I've seen him lock up like the Luka stats from last year, where Luka basically against everybody else in the NBA is a god, and against Frank was like incapable of functioning. Like it's a real thing. And I just think that like the Knicks are, they are in a position where they still don't have that offensive engine necessarily, but I do like the kind of makeup of the skill sets that exist on this roster. And I feel like if Frank shoots, we're going to get a lot of people who all of a sudden agree with us on like, oh yeah, Frank can be a useful player.
Yeah, I think when I think of Frank, just his entire time here, and, you know, it goes back to the draft and what he was brought in to do and the team that we had at the time. Mm-hmm. And you think of him playing off KP, and you always bring up those early games, but you saw how he was able to fit in. And Frank at that age was so much worse than he is now, right? Even though he obviously still had a lot of the same, you know, skill set, a lot of the same skills defensively, offensively, he was even more of a work in progress. But you look at that guy on a team that was winning some games when KP went hot for like the first 2 months, and he fit in. He did the right thing. He made the right play here and there. He had, obviously, every time he played Brooklyn, he was great. The Indiana game hits the three. We had a great game against the Lakers, that crazy game that I think went to overtime and everything. Yep. Yeah. So I'm like, you saw him fit in, and that might be the closest glimpse to a good team that we've seen him play on. And all he's been since he came to the league is a guy that needs to be on a good team for you to truly see his value. So this entire 4 year, we're going to the fourth year now of his rookie scale, I just felt like this waiting game for when are we finally going to get to see the Knicks kind of, you know, showcase in the Knicks team, be a team that he can play on, and not just play on, but then everyone can see what he does for the team. And like you said, he's been net positive all these years, despite these atrocious offensive statistics. Like that, I did a video on our channel like last year against the Bulls game, the Bobby Portis Bulls game, where Frank comes in, has 0 points, but completely changes the game defensively, even offensively, just doing all the little things. And these are the types of guys I always would see in the Western Conference Finals playing for the Spurs or something growing up, just doing all the right things. And I'm always like, why can't we have guys like that? One of those guys falls into our lap, and he's the biggest debate I've ever seen since being born. Like, the Knicks fandom debate over Frank is ridiculous. And I'm glad you brought up Marcus Smart. Obviously, that comparison's been gaining a lot of traction the last year. And it even goes down to the draft position, right? Smart was drafted sixth. And like you said, it worked out well for them getting in IT. Isaiah Thomas comes in, less pressure on Smart. But Marcus Smart last year shot 37.5% in year six. Yep. Right? Frank Ntilikina last year shot like 39 or something, and he's been trending up. Last 2 years, a little bit better. I think 39 from the field, and then like 39.3.
Yeah. Yo, exactly. I'm so pissed because before that fucking last Hawks game, he was over 50 true shooting and over 40% from the field.
And then he went, I think he went 1-7 or something at the end, right?
Yeah.
But my point remains, right? So Marcus Smart on a good Celtics team that's actually winning and doing important things is shooting 37.5%. He's shooting a lot. He's shooting 11 times per game, right? So this is a guy who, and obviously Marcus Smart does a lot of good things on the court regardless, right? Even if his shooting percentages have never really gotten to where they should be. But Frank, to me, projects to be a better offensive player than Marcus Smart. I don't think he's going to be quite the force defensively. I think he's going to be more of a team defender, kind of helping everything happen. I think Marcus Smart is more of a, you know, you could put him out there. And like, Frank has that in him.
I think, I don't know if he has that kind of inspiration. Like, and I hate saying anything positive about the Celtics or Marcus Smart, but like, just like very, like, Marcus Smart definitely makes these plays that, like, it changes kind of the feel of a game.
Right. Yeah. Marcus, like, I hate using phrases like dog, but he has that dog in. And the playoffs, you've seen
Knicks
it.
Fans are scarred by that.
So my thing with Frank, and I think this goes into the Peyton and the DSG thing, is when you draft a project, right, I know it was a different regime, but you got to work with what you have, right? I do not care that it's a project. You can pick a project whenever you want, but you need to treat the project like the project and understand that this is what it's supposed to be. Now, in a weird way, right, to be fair, if you think about it, so much debate has happened between fans, but the Knicks themselves have actually not been too crazy with Frank. He was dangled in some trade rumors a couple times, and he's survived somehow every trade opportunity so far. But he's still here. No one's even really gotten rid of him yet. And while I've disagreed with his role, we are in year four and he's here. And I know we're going to talk about his extension coming up and see, you know, what happens there. But he's still hanging around. And I'm hoping, you know, these 8 months off. 8 months is such a ridiculously long time to be away from playing the sport. You know, we always say guys get better in the summer, right? You look at the guys in the bubble, how much better some of them look after just 4 months. Obviously, and this is something else that might come up too, we're talking about an empty stadium, empty garden. I think it's going to make a bigger difference than we think with some of the younger guys. But just with regards to specifically, you know, setting up the year, looking at where we're going, I feel like Frank coming into year four, for me, 8 months off, I know he's been working. He's been a hard worker his whole time. I've watched this guy play so much in FIBA, and I know people may look at that FIBA tournament like whatever. But the games that France were playing, especially Argentina, USA, those are better teams than a lot of the teams we play in the NBA at times, at least especially as a complete roster. And he was holding his own and he was looking very comfortable. So I've always felt like the Knicks team is almost like the worst team in the NBA for him to be on in terms of what he would have needed for the beginning of his career. Also think in a weird way, life is weird, man. These 4 years could have toughened him up, turned him into a different player over time. I just can't shake the fear or the anger that's coming if we go through these 4 years. And I don't want to get ahead of it because I know we're going to talk about this. And then he goes somewhere else, and now all these seeds come to fruition, and he's the perfect role player, giving you, you know, 12, 5, and 5 or whatever, and he's doing everything right, and everyone's raving about him.
And it's somewhere else. It's a perfect segue because that was, I mean, so we went through with the 5 points. We went through don't hire a kid, get a lead ball handler. We talked a little bit about the third, get a wing shooter and stretch four. But the fourth point Schwinn made was sign Frank to reasonable extension. And to me, that's why this conversation is important, because I think there are a lot of Knicks fans who you know, they'll listen to another conversation about Frank and they kind of roll their eyes. And, you know, the point I think that's often missed is people who, this wasn't always true. I think there are a small group of Frank fans who have expectations that are unrealistic for him. But I think for the most part, people, nobody is saying Frank is going to be the player that turns the Knicks into some, you know, competitive team, or he's the franchise changing piece. The point is simply his time is, his rookie scale contract's coming up. You have to make a decision on an extension. And it seems like based on his market value right now, there's no reason you can't extend him for a reasonable rate where he either becomes a valuable role player for you that helps you when you hopefully become a good team, as you just explained, or is on a contract that's very easy to move in a deal to a team who can use his unique skill set, because he's not just a dime a dozen type of player. There are places where I think other front offices would be intrigued on what he could offer them. And for those reasons,
we know, right? Like, I mean,
yeah, right. We've seen it reported, right? So for those reasons, it just makes sense to finally, you know, end the whole curse of not being able to sign your first round picks.
and so like, I think, and this to me, and I like organizations, like changing a culture of an organization is really hard. It's really, really hard because there are things that are ingrained within you. And like, there's impacts of like past events that like stay with you. Right. And so I think for a lot of people, like for me, I just think it's really important that the Knicks get over this, like this, you know, at one, extending a rookie contract guy, but also in equally an important way, signing contracts that have commitments beyond 1 or 2 years that aren't for like star players or starry type players. Like,
well,
I think that's
my language.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important they do that. And like if Brock Oller is this contract god, I think, you know, I would imagine he can understand that, like, hey, look, like what D'Anthony Melton, right? He signed for 4 years, $35 million. JB, while I'm talking, do me a favor and go check out his stats from last year and compare them to Frank's stats from last year. Okay. Do yourself a favor. He got 4 years, $35 million. Everybody loves this guy. He is he's great. He has all these lineup impact, high impact shit. Guess what? Nobody cared when he was in Phoenix, but then he got to play with John Morant, and now all of a sudden that matters a ton. That's the point. And I think, like, you know, as far as, you know, Frank becoming this 12, you look at his stats again under Miller, right? Especially once he moved to the bench. This is like about, I think it's, I want to say 30 games that he played. As you know, the first, you know, basically the point guard off the bench, his per 36, okay, it is 14-6-4, 52 true shooting. That is what his line was per 36 under Mike Miller. Is that amazing? No. And 52 shooting is below league average. It's also a hell of a lot closer to league average than any kind of stretch he's put together before. And 30 games is not just like a nice week or two, right? That's 2-3 months. That was basically from the end of December until about the end of the season. So that's March. So about 2.5 months. That is a legitimate stretch of basketball. During that time, he had the third highest plus minus on the team in terms of on off. When he was on the court, the Knicks were actually a slight positive. They were a plus 0.6. Okay. So these are not like bullshit. This is not like me looking back at his rookie year and being like, oh man, like his November was awesome, and oh, one day we can see that. This is like a 2.5 month stretch where he's playing positive ball. And it's not like he was, you know, killing it out. He's not like, you know, dominating games or something. But you can see in that stretch, like, okay, I mean, you look at that Houston game, right? So RJ has a great game. Randall doesn't play like a doofus. Mitch is dominating inside. And all of a sudden, you just let Frank focus on the last down the stretch, give, like, when Russell Westbrook brings the ball down the court, you go stop him. Okay, that's your job. He, you know, draws a charge. He actually should have gotten a steal at the end of the game that got called as a foul, and then he stops him on the final possession of the game. Like, you see stuff like that, and to me, that's a clear, like, it's not a clear sign, but it kind of shows you, like, okay, there is a path for this guy, and we just haven't provided it yet. does that mean he's a bad player and we should move on from him? No. And I think that's the biggest mistake that a lot of front offices make is, well, this guy hasn't become what we hoped he could be, so we should move on from him. I think that's a big mistake. No, of course we all would want Frank to be more than Marcus Smart. Okay, that's the dream, right? Oh, like you draft Devin Booker at 13 and he turns into Devin Booker, right? That's the dream you want to have. But most guys don't end up like that. So it's about using what you have. And if they
I did look up, by the way, with Melton real quick to give those context. So one thing is, I mean, 3-point shooting, he shot 28.6% last season, which was actually worse than Frank, who was at 32%. But I'm just looking across the board. I mean, really, for his like league adjusted shooting totals and shooting rate totals, he's below Melton is below league average on everything except free throw rate. So he gets to the line a decent amount. But Frank is right in line with all of his percentiles, except he shoots better when he does get to the line and he takes more threes and makes more threes. So just kind of focusing on the shooting stats only.
Yeah. And Melton's a better rebounder. Like there's that. I think his assist percentage was higher. I'm not sure. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on there. I'm not trying to say that, like, I love Melton. Like, I would have loved it if the Knicks could have signed Melton. And I've been a fan of his since he got drafted. So this is not even a knock on anybody. But, like, I just think, like, those type of players, these type of guards, who they're not – and I don't know what – there's not a label for this type of player. And I think maybe that's the kind of thing that makes it hard for people to wrap their head around it. But, like – they're not lead guards and they're not super like awesome creators. But when you pair them with creators, all of a sudden they add a lot of value. And the Knicks don't have a creator yet. You know, hopefully RJ can develop into that guy, you know, whatever it is. Maybe Dennis Smith Jr., you know, I'm praying that he, you know, figures it out and like develops into this high usage, awesome playmaking point guard that people envision. Because actually, like, one of the reasons I was at least like intrigued when we acquired him in that KP trade was I was like, man, like, and him and Frank are really good buddies, right? They're like really, like, they've talked about it publicly before where they're like really good friends with each other. And I was always just like, man, if Dennis Jr. ever figured it out, Frank would be like the perfect wingman for him and they would be like perfect to play with each other. We haven't had a chance to see that at all, surprisingly, over a year and a half together at the Knicks. Yeah,
I think we got like 2 minutes of it. I remember when it happened. I think it was like maybe we got teased, like it was supposed to happen, and then Frank ended up coming out. But yeah, I agree fully. You know, it goes back to our lineup stuff earlier, right? Frank fits in so many lineups because of his versatility. And it's actually really annoying for me, this constant Frank debate, because it's obviously it has to do with his draft position. I think that's the number one thing. But I always think of it this way. The people that everyone wanted us to take around there, and I was a big Monk guy, I can't lie.
He's the one I wanted.
Yeah, when he dropped 52, was it 52 in college?
That was that Carolina game, right? He had like a crazy game against Carolina.
Okay, when he dropped that, I'm like, this is it. Let's undo this Steph Curry. Let's undo this Steph Curry curse. Let's get a shooter. So he wore the orange watch. I was all in on it. So the thing is like Dennis Smith Jr., Malik Monk and Frank Ntilikina, the 3 years later, the three guys that everyone wanted. And do not give me that Donovan Mitchell bullshit. I know. Yep. The thing is, I know we spoke about him like near the end. Phil was intrigued. Maybe they saw some of what the Jazz saw, obviously.
People lost their mind about that. That like the Knicks were even thinking about taking him at 8.
Exactly. This is the thing. I wasn't even on Twitter at the time. I was on Reddit still. But I remember how pissed people were that the Knicks might take Dennis Smith Jr. I mean, not Dennis Smith Jr. I mean, would have been that too. But
Donovan Mitchell, yeah.
People were so angry at the idea that we were going to take someone who's mocked in the teens at number 8. Remember, Frank was even number 6, I remember, earlier in the season, you know, in terms of the mock. So people were really upset. I'm like, 3 years later, Monk, DSJ, and Frank. Is Frank not the best of that group?
He is. And that's what's fucking annoying about it. It's like we have, like, and I've seen, like I love John. I love Macri, right? But even he had a newsletter last week where he was like, oh, yeah, if we're like doing the upside thing, Dennis Smith Jr. should start. And I just about wanted to pull my hair out, which I have a lot of right now because I haven't got a haircut in a while. And I just like wanted to lose my mind because I'm like, what are we talking about here? Like, I'm so sick and tired of having time for every other project, every other reclamation guy in the league other than our own. And it's been like, and obviously Macri doesn't run the Knicks. But like, but like,
well, I'm glad he always creates this reaction for you too, though. But no, but one thing I will say to that, though, I do think, again, like what we're sort of saying here is we all agree that Frank's value is his sort of unique, like,
he can provide
skill
balance.
Set and his versatility he provides to the lineup. To say that Dennis Smith Jr., though, has a higher, quote, upside in the sense of, could he have under Tibbs like this breakout season where, especially amongst like a lot of the traditional statistics and scoring and all that jazz, he, you know, he does really well, that I think he can reach a different level in that regard than Frank. I think, yes, I do think there's like the two ways of looking at it. It's one, who could be like the starting point guard and someone that, like I said, just kind of reaches a higher ceiling in terms of his offensive game, versus who is the better all-around player that fits in different lineups and you would want to invest more in long-term. I guess maybe that's where the distinction might lie.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that's like, said what, that's the higher ceiling, lower floor thing. I mean, going back to the draft for me, when it comes to DSJ, my thought was this. And I didn't want him at all. I'm like, for this guy to become good at the NBA level, he has to hit like the 1% of his ability, right? Outside of that, you have a guy who's going to annoy you with his inefficiency or his lack of thinking about the game and things like that. And honestly, and you know, people like to bring up last year, but even look at the last Dallas year, they were out on him early. You know what I mean? Halfway through like Luka's first season there, his rookie year. And obviously the fit with Luka wasn't perfect, et cetera, but there were already issues coming up with regards to, you know, his fit with the team, his motivation. He was skipping practice. I know there was like a whole trade thing going on for like 2 weeks. So I'm just saying DSJ has not been like this consummate professional who just come in to the NBA and has been doing nothing but working hard this whole time. Maybe he's been working hard in some ways, but we haven't seen it on the court. And yes, maybe there is a world where, you know, everything clicks for him. And then you have this super dynamic guy that's this athletic, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a much more likely world of Frank becoming a very solid role player. And I would still say, even though I know a lot of people are out on this, and I'm not claiming that he's going to be any kind of star, but I do think if you just follow his progression and what he projects to be, I do think there's a chance he's even more than Marcus Smart. I do think there's a chance he can still possibly be a starting point guard in the league. I mean, we're still looking at someone who, and yes, this is just raw statistics, but the youngest Nick ever with 20-10 for a guy who had such a little offensive game coming into the league. And it's definitely grown and has a long way to go again. But for me, like, I feel like it's been so long since we saw these guys as well. So many of these guys could be different players. You know what I mean? When we get into this, you know, 8-month break, we're finally going to see them at training camp this week and just hear what we're hearing. And then preseason and all that, I'm very interested in seeing just like how different some of these guys look, because that's a ridiculous amount of time off, especially at this age. I expect RJ Barrett, just to touch on him really quickly, to come in looking like a different player. This is kind of, if you think about it, this could be mid-year too when you think of the time off. So, you know, big decisions ahead. As for Frank's extension, I would love to lock him in on like 3 years, 20 mil if possible. But I'm interested in, would he take it? Number one, I think Frank likes being in New York, just from like a personal feeling. But I feel like his agent could be pushing him for other opportunities and could point to the fact that every year you've been here, you've had to deal with players coming in and taking minutes from you and then leaving the year later. So you've had like 3 or 4 or 5 point guards at this point, just taking away crucial potential development time for you. Maybe go to a more stable franchise where, you know, you'll have a role and it won't be like this. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I would love to bet on it, right? Getting the extension early so you have him, and it's not too expensive. And then if he outplays it, you're chilling. So that would be the dream. I think, what's the deadline? December 21st, is it?
Something yeah, like right that. Before the right before the yeah. season, right?
Well, let me ask you guys this. What do you guys think? Gut feeling. I feel like there's no extension coming by then. But what do you think?
I think that he can get it. It all depends on training camp. I think he actually has a chance of getting an extension. Just looking at like if you just look at like kind of stuff Cleveland has done with when Brock Oller was there, stuff like Larry Nance Jr. got an extension. They've signed, they've made it a priority in some situations to extend guys just to preserve their kind of trade value.
Terry,
you know, with this, with this happens all the time in soccer, where like you don't actually want to keep the guy, but you sign him to a new contract so you can sell him, right, for a better price. Like I think it's like the same concept. So I think if Frank comes out and like, look, say whatever you want about the past coaches and stuff, and it's all fair. Tibbs is not those guys. Tibbs cares about defense. He will value the things that we think Frank is good at. If he's good at them, he has to shoot. Like, it to me is just about the shooting now at this point with him, because I think the handle is, he's never going to be Kyrie Irving, right? We know that. But I think the handle is good enough that if he can shoot, he can leverage, he can leverage that into more playmaking opportunities and, you know, just ability to get into the lane and make plays. But he has to be able to shoot. So can he shoot? I know Prez is super high on kind of the mechanical changes he's made over the offseason. I know that people don't care about that stuff. I being one of them, I just like I'm happy to hear that somebody who knows way more about shot mechanics than me thinks that Frank's changes he's made are good, but I don't care. Just shoot. Like I will judge that based on how he does when the games actually start, but he has to be able to shoot. And if he comes into training camp, and I think if he has a good camp and he shoots, I genuinely think he has a chance of getting an extension. What would he take it? I think you bring up a good point. Again, like we know Tibbs is not a bullshit guy. He's not going to be out here handing out minutes. Just be like, I don't get the sense from this regime that minutes are going to be doled out based on like who Scott Perry drafted 16 years ago. Okay. Like I don't get that sense. And I think if Frank comes out and he's clearly better than Elfrid Payton and Dennis Smith Jr., he's going to get minutes. Maybe he doesn't start off as a starting point guard, but if he brings that same energy to the regular season, he's going to get a role and he's going to eventually win the job over. So to me, it just, at this point, it's year four, it falls on him. And like I think that he can get an extension. I think that if they offered it to him, he would take it. I hear what you're saying, Terry, but like I also ultimately think that a guy, if he gets offered 3 years, $27 million, you're going to come off that extension and you'll be 25, 26 years old still. You can cash in again. It's in the context of the NBA, $27 million over 3 years isn't shit. But in the context of life, $27 million over 3 years is life-changing money.
Yeah,
and I think like if you still have the chance to cash in again during your prime years, most guys take that. I think Austin Rivers, when he did his thing after I think he ultimately signed a 3 year $35 million thing or something like that back in 2016 or 2017. It's just like, is that amazing money? No, but I think like it is money though that, you know, for the rest of his life, he's probably fine as long as he didn't squander it on stupid shit. So like, I think he would take it if they offered him a good extension. I do think he likes being in New York. And I think like, you know, for what it's worth, I think it's somewhat telling that a guy like RJ, who was pretty like very well kind of, he was already very good at doing the Jeter trick of saying absolutely nothing anytime he was asked something. But I do think it was telling that like, on multiple occasions, he made it a point to like say, I like being on the court with Frank, and like going out of his way to like praise him after the Rockets game when he could have just, you know, I mean, he had a great game, right? Like RJ had a great game. And the first thing I think in his post game that he said was like, you know, oh yeah, Frank's defense like changed the game. And it was like, he sealed the victory. And he said before, he's talked like, I think two or three times he said like, I like being on the court with Frank. I like the way he plays and blah, blah, blah. Like, look, I know the Knicks didn't care about their shit with KP and Willie Hernan Gomez, and we can shit on KP, or I can anyway. JB has more measured takes on KP than I do. But like, I think that like, you know, if you want to build a culture where, and you want to keep guys who you presumably are trying to build around somewhat happy, is it really that risky? And is it really that much of an ask to just be like, okay, you like this guy, he seems to have some value in the court as like a lineup connector who can defend multiple positions and we think is going to be able to shoot. Like, let's bet on this 3 years, $24 million. I don't think you're asking for a whole lot there. And I just feel like if you're not even willing to take that risk, then ultimately just try and flip him at some point for the best value you can get, because you're just saying that you don't even think that he had value.
And yeah. I think, like you mentioned, so if you're flipping him on the last year of his rookie scale contract, where the team acquiring him gains his bird rights, which are astronomical. It's like $18 million or something like that. And just to explain, that would be the cap hold in terms of if you wanted to re-sign him and go over to cap. You're not really gaining that much, a team taking him for that. So the idea is if you extend him, even if it's not this, you know, you're not looking necessarily, I'm going to extend him and trade him this season. But the point is, you now have some term, hopefully some like team-friendly term, where he becomes an asset that if you need to suddenly clear up that cap space, or for whatever reason you decide it doesn't work, you know, I think you're going to get more value trading him that way than just unloading him now at the end of his rookie skill contract.
Isn't there some weird stuff with base year compensation? So like if they extended him now, how he would count as a trade salary?
The base year compensation, that's just for like if you do the sign and trade and okay. You use a player's like bird rights. Yeah. But I guess this leads to the final point that you had, and that was something they've already sort of done, but I think you were hoping for something bigger. take a salary dump for a pick. Now, we know with Ed Davis, the Knicks have already done some, you know, miraculous work. We're all crediting Brock Aller. We don't know if it was really him.
I just got to say this real quick, guys. I've never seen such a minuscule NBA move create waves like this. We got parties for this, which is honestly was incredible. I'm using words like incredible. It was obviously a really good deal, but just showing what we've been starved for, it's been incredible. Exactly. Knicks Twitter just connect with joy over this minor Ed Davis move, but hey, we'll see what it yields.
I remember we talked about this once, and I think this like is an example of that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember we talked once about like when Rose and Tibbs, like, you know, when Rose got hired and then he hired Tibbs, we were talking about like what is the kind of like appeal, like why is it an appealing job? And one thing you said was like, it was like, dude, these guys probably looked at the Knicks and they see like how low the bar is right now. And they're just like, look, if all we do is go there and are like basically competent, we're like they have to look at this position, like this job, and be like, dude, it can't be this hard to just be competent in New York and like and like succeed.
Yeah.
And I remember
right. I was picturing them on the phone with each other before they, you know, decided to hire him and being like, Tibbs, seriously, you could come here, you win like 38 games, and it's gonna be like
It's funny, right? I know it's a 72 game season, so obviously it's not the same, but I've been saying this just in terms of Nick relevancy for years, like where we need to be, that players are now more interested in coming here and we kind of clean up our rep. People talk about the playoffs. We do not need to make the playoffs. The Knicks need to win in a regular season like 37, 38 games. And that alone, especially, you know, if it's a young guy's contributing, et cetera, would change so much of the perception around the league. It's not even about the playoffs. Honestly, it's literally, if we get the 10th seed and get into play-in games and just have a couple moments in there, that alone will shift the perception going into free agency so much.
Well, also this year, and I tweeted this out this week because everyone was going nuts already watching Cade and thinking about 2021 in the lottery. It's the way the roster is right now. And again, there's some things you could squabble over on certain rotation minutes, but that's really nitpicking. The fact is, the way the roster is right now, the only possible way this team like outperforms their projections is if you literally have significant development from your young players, which is a good thing. And I think that's why this year, in terms of how you root for the Knicks and thinking about the 2021 lottery, it's different than in previous seasons where you felt frustrated that veteran players were playing in place of the young guys. That was meaning you were failing on two accounts. One, you're not developing the young guys, and another, you're hurting your lottery odds. This year, like, I'm sorry, like, if the Knicks somehow win over 30 games, that should not be like, oh, of course, in this great draft, they won 30. It's like, that means like Obi Toppin is going to shock the world. Good. Like, and he's really like a legit player. Like, that's what that means. So I'm excited that we get that aspect of this roster, because it makes it where you can like genuinely root for them to do well. And you feel like you're not like shooting yourself in the foot based on the lottery odds. Like, it means that the young guys have to be good for them to win that number of games.
And just like to go back, like the salary dump for a pick, I mean, sure, we could all hope for more, but I think the Knicks, at least, look, maybe the Batum thing happens. I'm suspecting at this point that, like, I think Keith Smith tweeted something yesterday about how he thinks it'll go down. And, yeah, I mean, I think the Knicks maybe are still alive in, you know, getting something out of that thing. But, you know, whatever it is,
yeah, it doesn't seem to be a lot of, like, although one thing I will say real quick, it is a little odd that right now, as we sit here on Sunday, we got $23.3 million of cap space. They have not yet officially signed Elfrid Payton, which yesterday players reported to New York on Saturday to start testing so they could start workouts as soon as Tuesday. If Payton doesn't start that testing, it delays when he starts camp. And you do just look at it and you say, geez, there's $23.3 million in cap space. You literally add Reggie Bullock and you're at the magic number you need to take him back. So I think that's why everyone's sort of in pause mode. But anyways, go on.
And also, like, you know, and this we can tie back, but like, I was like, the Hornets really don't have any depth right now, especially on the wing after kind of what they've done this offseason. So, like, yeah, Reggie Bullock is one, but like, I don't think the Knicks care about Jacob Evans. I think they could just throw him in the deal too, and that still serves the same purpose for the Hornets. And they can sell it as like, oh, look, we got a rookie scale guy out of this, also freebie, like, cool stuff. But as far as the salary dump stuff goes, like, yeah, like the Knicks did that, and I think the more inspiring thing, anyway, isn't just that, like, they did the salary dump and then they sat around and were like, yep, we did it, great job. Like, nope. Then they turned the salary dump into two rookie scale players. Like, Jacob Evans probably sucks. I have never really been that impressed with him, even going back to when he was a prospect. But like, Omari Spellman is a player, and, you know, this also goes back to one of my things was get a wing shooter, which they think they did do. I'll call Burks a wing shooter. I think that's fair. And a stretch four, like, Omari Spellman isn't he's not a proven stretch four in the NBA, but if you go back to when he was drafted and what the kind of like projection for him was, that was one of them being like a stretch four, being a stretch four or five kind of player. And he's not been in shape so far, 2 years through the NBA. He's had other issues. But like, this is a player who, you know, you go back and look at when he came out of Nova, people were really high on him. And I think that like getting that for free out of Ed Davis, who Utah couldn't wait to get rid of at the cost of 2 second-round picks, you get Spellman. I mean, you turn a $5 million cap dump into $4 million worth of two rookie-scale players and an additional second. So, like, that to me shows that, you know, these guys aren't just, like, doing the basics necessarily, but they're also willing to, like, take those basics and flip it into more. Hopefully they can get in on this Batum thing, and maybe they can get, like, a lightly protected future first or something out of it. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, if you just go through kind of like these key points, you know, don't hire a kid, check, get a lead ball hunter via draft or free agency. No, they didn't do it. Okay. Get a wing shooter and stretch four. I'm going to give them a pass on that. Sign Frank to a reasonable extension to be decided. Take a salary dump for a pick. I give them an A+ for that one just because of how they've kind of flipped it into more. So like overall, like, have they hit all the marks? No, but I think the general tenor from Knicks fans, if this offseason, if training camp starts tomorrow and this is the sum total of what they've done so far, I think most people would be like, okay, like, is everything perfect? No, we still have very reasonable question marks to kind of raise about our chances going forward and what the front office is going to do, of course. But like, I think most people would say they've done a fine job so far. And like, at least in terms of what the Knicks are working with, they're in a better position. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see, like, the development stuff ultimately. And, you know, ultimately, like, the thing is, all of these things we're talking about, they're nice and they're important in terms of team building, but they really are the small potatoes. Because if the development of RJ, like, the three guys that ultimately matter the most this year are RJ, it's OB, and it's Mitch. Yep. If those three guys don't show any progress, or if OB comes in and he, you know, sucks, and Mitch is just the same thing, and RJ isn't better. Like, if those three things happen, then, you know, then we're not really progressing as a franchise. And we are once again going to be headed into the lottery and hoping that finally the Knicks can draft somebody who is providing positive on-court impact in a very tangible way that moves the baseline for the franchise. I'm a bit more bullish, I think, than a lot of Knicks fans are. Like, I kind of think that they've signed what? Like, they've signed Noel, they've signed Peyton, we assume. I mean, I think that they did.
Yeah, it's
a mechanics right, thing.
You're saying who have they signed? So it's Burks for $6 million, Noel for $5 million, and then Peyton we consume for around $5 million. And then they added Evans and Spellman in trade. And then obviously Austin Rivers became the sign and trade, but he is a signing.
Yeah. And Theo Pinson.
Yeah, and Theo Pinson.
Well, yeah, the two ways guy. Yeah. Yep.
And you know, Michael
and Kidd Michael Kidd Gilchrist. Yeah. Right.
So
yeah.
I think that there is though they added a good amount of vets instead of doing crazy shit like they did last season where they did 7 vets. And not just did they sign 7 vets, they clearly promised them all like playing time and roles that kind of flew counter to what you should have been prioritizing. This feels a lot different. I think they signed a good amount of vets. I don't think they've made promises to them based on the contracts that they've signed about playing time or role or anything like that. And I think that like there's a pretty intriguing blend of skills here, which doesn't mean that we're going to be awesome and good, but I think it provides a much better platform for the young players that you want to be showcasing and hopefully prioritizing for them to show out. And that matters. I think it'll make for a better on-court product. And I think like, look, there's still the pie in the sky scenario where Charlotte does the Julius Randle for Batum trade flip. I think you tweeted it today that the numbers still just about work so that they can still sign Hayward. So, you know, hopefully that would be ideal, because I think if you get rid of Randle, then I think you look at this roster and I, you know, even with Peyton, like then I think Peyton becomes much less annoying than if you have Randle on the roster, because then his penetration and all that kind of stuff, he can't be passing it to Randle, right? He has to pass it to Obi. He has to pass it to Mitch. He has to pass it to RJ. And all of a sudden, we can all sit around and appreciate having a penetrating guard that can create some dribble drive opportunities by collapsing the defense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, well, no, that was actually, we went through pretty well. For us, that was pretty timely to go through all of our points. But those were the main ones. One thing I will say is, you know, the caveat is the Knicks, you know, whenever they decide to officially sign Peyton here, they would be at 16 guaranteed contracts. So, you know, and with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, you expect that they're going to try to find a way to keep him on the roster. So that's really 17 players for 15 spots. So there has to be movement, whether that movement is something as simple as they waive a player based on what we just kind of described in terms of how this front office has been operating. It seems like they wouldn't just exhaust an asset that way. They would look to move someone. But that said, a lot of rosters are getting, you know, full, and there's other teams that are in the same position where they also have some extra bodies. There's not as many places as you would think to just dump an extra player. So you might have to get a little creative with that. But the point is, there still seems to be this sort of opening for, as we all want to put a pretty bow on the end of the offseason, where the Knicks stand, that something else could happen here, whether it's a minor roster correction to just make space or whether that is something bigger. I guess we can debate that. But
just one thing to note, Begley, I think, had it on, I want to say the 23rd. He wrote some piece, but in it he mentioned that as far as, you know, his, you know, what he said, right? Or what he had heard and all that kind of stuff, is he thinks the Knicks are okay with going into camp, letting the point guard situation kind of decide itself. And, you know, that, like, I think Evans is a pretty easy wave if it comes to that. I feel like pretty confident they would just wave him if there's no move that they can unload him in. And, you know, then it's about making one spot and right. Like, you know, the MKG thing, like they could have him hang out on an exhibit 10 for a while and then, you know, move somebody later on and bring him back up. So I think that they have options in terms of like working the roster to get it to 15 and then maybe making moves later. The fact that they've saved this much cap space so far, gives them flexibility to do some things even in the regular season. Like, I think we had Schmelk on a week ago, and he mentioned that, like, you know, there are teams that have spent money this offseason, and look, there's COVID. There's not going to be people in the stands. You know, some of these teams might be having buyer's remorse in a month or two, and where better to, you know, park your mistake than in the Knicks cap space.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say, kind of like as we're giving our autopsy now in the offseason, I feel like this offseason is kind of basically the much better version of last offseason. I don't have like everything in front of me, but you can see so many parallels, right? So the salary dump, quote unquote, of last year was flipping Marcus Morris, you know, and getting a pick from it. But we, even though obviously it's a bigger asset getting a first round pick, we don't know what the Knicks are going to do yet, if they are going to do a Batum trade or do another dump. But in a very simple way, we're able to use the Ed Davis thing to get some assets in here. You look at all the signings, honestly, go down the line, literally cheaper versions and potentially better players than the guys you got last year. Bobby Portis to Nerlens Noel, right? You now have a better backup big. Obviously, Bobby's role was not really to be a rim protector, but you get someone like Nerlens Noel, who's cheaper, who's going to back up Mitch and allow us to have elite rim protection for 48 minutes. Right, you look at Wayne Ellington, who I still think was kind of sabotaged by Fizz, but he was here. What was he on? $10 million, I think, last year. And now, there you go. So now we got Alec Burks, and then we got Alec Burks on five, who can do more as a player, who maybe not, you know, quite the dead-eye shooter, but I think he's just going to add a lot more to the team in terms of playmaking, shot creation, all that stuff. So, and I know if I went through every player, you could almost find a comparable player last year that we signed and a better version this year, maybe a better version in terms of how they'll fit with the team and who is also cheaper. Because last year we, you know, even though it was short deals, options, 1 year deals, et cetera, you could definitely see a bunch of overpays. Whereas this year, the fact that we got Austin Rivers for what, $2.3 million a year, we got, what's Nerlens? Is Nerlens on five?
Five.
Burks is on the same. So it's like actually, you know, these are even better assets in terms of.
I like Noel. I really like that signing, actually.
I really do. That was actually, out of all of them, I mean, Burks was really exciting for me just because of everything he can do. But I didn't see the Noel one coming. And it's just exciting to think of us, you know, we would die when Mitch went out the game. So just having elite protection for 48 minutes. And then not just that, someone who's really going to push Mitch because Mitch can't do his bullshit anymore with a guy like Nerlens Noel there. Who definitely could start, you know, I mean, and even outplay Mitch in many aspects if it came to that. So I just feel like last year, which it really sucks in the end because it was a lot of wasted time, I feel, even going from like the off season and then the entire season. Looking at this year, I feel like this is what last year should have been, hopefully. I think they made smarter signings. And like you said, it's all at the margins. We haven't done anything crazy, but we've exhibited basic competence. And in fact, I'm actually intrigued by the idea and the fact that we've been doing these small moves because it feels like things past regimes wouldn't have even cared about or thought about. You know what I mean? They may have been more big picture, just looking at the bigger deals. The fact that they worked so hard on draft night to move up a couple spots and then traded away. But you know what I mean? The whole little maneuvering that happened on draft night was intriguing to me because I feel like, oh, this is how smart front offices operate, right? It's not just the simple big stuff that we all know just from being fans of the NBA. This is stuff that, you know, it's the first time I think I tweeted this where I actually feel, wait, the front office is smarter than me. I don't know what they're going to do next. And not to like big me up or any of us, right? But I just think we've all felt, everyone doing Knicks content creation, even just fans, for a long time, we're seeing just obvious things being missed. It feels like they're being missed or just mistakes being made. And I was genuinely so intrigued as everything unfolded this week because I really couldn't tell what was coming next. And instead of that being fear, which is what it was under Mills all these years, it felt more like intrigue. Like, okay, they're going to come up with something, going to pull a rabbit out the hat here that I hadn't thought of. And I still feel like that whatever that final rabbit is still to come. Because like you mentioned, JB, with the roster situation, we do obviously have to make something happen there just to get the numbers in order. And it just feels with that cap space lingering out there and no one else has it, it feels like something else is on the horizon. And it could be, I haven't really thought of who it would be, but it could be something we're not expecting. Just like how, you know, like the Nerlens Noel signing or Austin River just kind of really came out of nowhere. If we do, let's say we do some massive salary dump, it could be something that we have not even considered. Final point, I just want to bring this up. Do you realize we've not said Kevin Knox's name once?
Oh, I don't know, that's telling, isn't it?
I think he's probably been, you know, we've talked, Frank gets this a lot too, where people are like, he's been hard done by. I think Knox has been punished a lot in terms of just like the mess that the Knicks have been. And they've done absolutely nothing to like kind of protect him in a way. They've just kind of thrown him out there and let him get shit on because he's not as good as, you know, XYZ players they could have had, which, you know, we kind of had an idea was going to be the case when he was picked. Again, he was drafted very much as a project, and he didn't even have the baseline of a Frank where you were like, well, he's already a good defender, right? He was always going to be a project on both ends of the floor. So I hope for that kid's sake that he does step up. I always had kind of year three as, you know, if he is going to be a player, this is the time that we would see it. And I'm hopeful that we still do get a chance to see it because, like, he's a good kid. And I just feel like I've shit on him a bunch, but I've seen like some of the stuff he gets on social media is brutal. And I feel really bad for him. So I hope that he does kind of prove himself. And I guess like one last question before we're totally done. Terry, are you buying the Dennis Smith Jr. shot thing or what's up? Because I'm just somebody that like, until I see it in games consistently, I just don't care.
I mean, so what's a good shot for Dennis Smith Jr., right? Because, I mean, is it that he's back to Dallas levels where he's just inefficient, or is he the worst player to pick up the spurt? I think he's somewhere closer to Dallas. I think just looking at the shot, and Prez of the Strickland, another shout out there, he actually brought up a really great point, which is just that, you know, there's all this talk about Dennis Smith Jr.'s jump shot. That is not the only problem with his game. Even if his jump shot is better and it can open more things up, he still has a lot of different things to work on as a lead guard. So just looking at the shot specifically, the major points that we kind of like, you know, came across were that Dennis Smith Jr. jumps too high. He's inconsistent in the jumping, which probably goes into his athletic ability and how he generally plays. So he jumps too high on a jump shot, and sometimes it's varying too much, right? So he's jumping too little, but then he's jumping out the gym on another jump shot. His release has had a lot of issues in terms of releasing at the peak of the jump and then sometimes being on the way down instead of on the way up. He's cleaned that up a little bit, it seems. But I still think like we got to see it in action. Like I think if anything, the last 2 years has completely exhausted me on training videos. And now I'm like, I want to see it in the game. I want to see how he plays. But I'm looking for more than just a jump shot, man. I'm looking for his overall attitude. I was never a big DHA fan. I don't think any of us here really are big DHA fans. But he's an asset on the Knicks. And if he's someone who breaks out, that's good for everyone on the team. So I'm hoping we see more. I think he'll, like I said, he will 100% be better than last year. Because last year was not an NBA player by any stretch of the imagination. No. It would be impossible, I think, for him to replicate what happened last season. So he will be improved, and I'm hoping we see him closer to what he was kind of when he came over in the trade. But he also, like, you could see he was in his own head. You know what I mean? He went through a really rough year. So I think he will be better. As for the shot being completely improved, I would say it's definitely better, but we got to see it in action. And it's different when you got game speed. And we've seen some training videos, but I don't know who these guys are they're playing. It doesn't count.
Yeah, no, and I guess it sums it up, right? We've set the low bars of, can Dennis Smith Jr. be better than borderline, you know, non-NBA player? Can the Knicks have an off season where they just don't, you know? And again, I will add to that because I've been saying it a lot. I do think that narrative is overblown a bit because the Knicks have not signed many players at all in the last 5 off seasons to big contracts. They just haven't made good on the margin moves, which I think I won't go over it all again, but I think we all agree that that is the big difference right now. It's easy though to sort of sit back, be patient. Sooner or later, you have to do something that's going to sacrifice some cap space. That's going to put a little skin in the game. We haven't seen that yet from Rose. So that's what I think we're all looking forward to seeing. But I think really what it comes down to with the fan base is they just want a chance to see the young players put in positions where they're just allowed to develop naturally. And even if they're bad, the fans will deal with that versus the frustration of losing minutes to a veteran. And then on top of that, with the salary, I think what's so funny when we say about trading for a pick, it's almost like the fan base is so, you know, PTSD about any idea of signing like a Noah type contract. That if you're going to get a player that makes a lot of money. As long as it has a draft pick attached to it, it's sort of like it sort of strips away the fact that the cap space is used. So it's like, you can use the cap space as long as we get like a sweetener, because I don't think anyone wants to fully commit any of that cap space yet to an actual signing. But again, it's all based on how we're sort of viewing things in the context of Knicks fans. And I think that's what's difficult, even for me as a content creator, to say, you know, how do you actually view these moves? Because even as non-Knicks fans, we know there's a lot of bias in terms of how the team's covered. So it's almost really hard, more than any other team in the league, I think, to just have like a fair assessment of what the Knicks have done. But all that said, I think we've covered a lot here. It's actually sunny out, which I'm going to take advantage of when we get off here. Guys, any last things that you want to promote? Obviously, Pod Strictly, you've been listening this far. I assume you're subscribed to the podcast, but if not, make sure you are. Also, the strict.land for all the wonderful content and deep, in-depth articles on anything you can imagine. So make sure you bookmark that or check that out. Schwinn, I'll go to you, and then we'll let our guests finish it up.
I have nothing right now. I do need to get back into writing. So hopefully, you know, I think like the last couple of weeks have been kind of crazy. So hopefully with, you know, hopefully things are slowing down as far as transactions go for the Knicks. And I can, you know, maybe write something up on how things are shaping up. But yeah, nothing other than that. Just plugging the Strickland. There are people who are writing who are doing a great job, so please check that out. Yeah, that's it.
All right, Terry.
Awesome. Yeah, first off, guys, I actually want to say, because I was away when this whole thing started, I came back, I go to Twitter, I see the Strickland, I'm like, what the hell is this? You guys have done such an incredible job. Like, I've been catching up kind of on the past few months, so I love like the site. I love the vision. Yeah, keep it up. Thanks for having me on. Glad to be back. For us, just with Terry and Trey, what we're doing this week, we have a off-season grading video coming up in the next 2 days where we'll be giving Fs across. I'm kidding. We're probably going to be a B. We'll see. But we have that coming up. And I also have a little snippet of my interview. Well, not an interview. I got to ask Emmanuel Quickly a question. And we're doing a video on Quickly and just what he can possibly bring to the Knicks. And I'll have that in there. The question is actually up now. If you go to the Knicks YouTube page, I think you can find it. But I'll be putting that in there, and we'll be talking a bit about Quickly, and that's coming up this week. But yeah, that's it.
Okay, great. All right. Well, thanks, guys, and we'll catch everyone next time. Mm-hmm.